Pop Spotting 201.
Monday, January 30th, 2012.
Make her leave. Let that snitch get murked.
Dennis, man, I need the nurse. Do you want me to die?
You can't stand around here arguing. We need to roll now.
Welcome to Pop Spotting. I'm Jen.
And I am Ryan.
It's Movie Monday, and we're going to try to continue our mission to catch up with movies that were really rated high on a lot of best of 2011 lists that are now out for DVD or streaming.
That's right. Now, of course, many of you wrote in and called in saying that Attack the Block would be among your top picks for 2011. We were always curious about it. We heard about it, but it came and went very quickly. It was very briefly here in Honolulu. Matt was able to catch it, so that's why he was trying to spread the word. So we tried the newfangled red box machine in our local supermarket to pick up this film and to see if it was really worth seeking out this year.
It came out in May in the UK, and it saw only a limited release here in North America. It's out on DVD and Blu-ray. The Hollywood Reporter says it's the best movie of the year that no one went to see.
And of course, that's a recipe for our curiosity. It was directed by Joe Cornish, not really well known. He often partners with Edgar Wright in terms of films. It's his directorial debut, but he's primarily known for his comedy and for television in the UK.
It's produced by Big Talk Productions, and they're known for films including Shaun of the Dead and Hot Fuzz and Scott Pilgrim vs. the World.
So, of course, it sounded like a lot of fun. So, the basic setup is we've got a street gang in South London, a very young street gang, and they have to face an alien invasion. And in the process, they entangle and enlist the help of their neighbors and strangers. And this film, at least for American audiences, used primarily or largely unknown actors playing very, very unlikely heroes.
The main character of the movie is named Moses. He's played by John Boyega. Moses is the leader of this gang, and on Guy Fawkes Night, they rob a nurse named Sam, and during the robbery, they end up doing something that completely changes the course of the evening.
Right. Well, you know, I really like in this film, it had a pretty quick setup. We get to know these kids. We get to know their small world and really how that world that they live in fits into this bigger picture of London. And you mentioned Guy Fawkes Night, the 5th of November, or Fireworks Night. So there's fireworks in the air, and there's general mayhem on the ground in these streets, this lower-income area. And so all of London is distracted. The cops are busy with lots of other things going on. So it's really down to these kids who end up crossing paths with the aliens first. And like you said, what they do changes the course of the evening because they do what dumb, tough kids will do when they encounter unfamiliar things, and everything kind of snowballs from there.
But this is way more than a horror or creature movie. It's about the characters. It's a story of how these violent kids cooperate not only with each other, but with people around them and put their brains together to thwart off this alien invasion.
Well, I mean, sure, it's about the characters, but I was pleasantly surprised that it is a solid sci-fi horror creature film. It's a great entry in the genre. It had good scares. You were gasping and jumping back and yelping, and that's always a good sign. There's some gore and some blood. I mean, they don't hold back in this film in any way. I think that it did hit a nerve with me. It did kind of strike a chord because of the physical effects, the special effects, and kind of the presentation, the cinematography. It was very down to earth. I mean, I guess there was some CGI, some, you know, fancy special effects, but whatever was there, it was solid. There weren't any seams or lines. I have to admit, when I heard about the movie and how it was kind of the underdog and unseen, I was still thinking that, especially given the other films by this production company, that it would be kind of campy or cheesy, or that they would hope that we would look past some of the, you know, the shortcomings in the effects because it's just a great story. But no, it was good on all levels. I enjoyed this film quite a bit.
The main character is Moses, and he plays a huge part in this movie. So John Boyega's performance is very important, and he does a great job. He really keeps up the facade of a tough leader, but you can tell as Moses, he's very scared. He's very uncertain. He's never, ever been in a situation like this, and he knows that to some extent, these kids are really counting on him, and he's not sure what to do. So he really comes to terms with the consequences of his actions.
Yeah, I like how the film basically takes the time to unravel Moses' character. And I agree, his performance is great because I'll admit, when you first meet him, when, you know, he and his fellow thugs are shaking down Sam, and my American sensibilities kicked in, and I was like, well, are these going to be the protagonists of the film? Oh, no, maybe there's another gang, or maybe these guys are going to get their just desserts. But no, you know, these potentially unlikable bad kids are going to be the protagonists, the heroes of the film. And so they start kind of on the unlikable side, but it's in his eyes, for example. You know, Moses, is, as much as he puffs out his chest, as he knows what to say, he commands respect from his crew, but you can see in his eyes that he's still a kid and that he's still scared. So in this pretty short film, we kind of get to see Moses grow up, and as far as the character goes, he's great.
And it's the final scene, I think, in the movie that really tells you all that you need to know about Moses, but he doesn't say a word. It's the look on his face at the very end of the movie that tells you that this character has experienced something that has totally changed his life and might even change the course of his life.
Well, for sure. I like that. You're right. I can see that last shot in my head. Again, it is his journey. We are following him. So I have to, you know, big props to John Boyega for sure. The other standout, and I think probably the natural standout, is Sam, the nurse. You know, she's an English actress. She was in like a Peter O'Toole film in 2006, Venus, but she has such a look to her, such a stature to her, that most of the film, I'm like, who is she? She must be someone we know. Mm-hmm. She must be someone who's done something else. But I had to look her up. Turns out I've not seen anything else that she's done, but she has that presence. So, you know, Jodie Whittaker to me really shined in this film. I mean, somebody who now I want to see in other things because of what she had to do, because of the arc of her character. She had to run the whole range from a really disheartened and weak victim to obviously a fighter and somebody who can really hold her own in this tough neighborhood, to even somebody who might have kind of a maternal side to her, a protective side to her, to be somebody who, you know, has the benefit of wisdom of age, or at least beyond these other kids, you know, can kind of advise them, but also somebody who needs a lot of help, who needs a lot of guidance, who can get lost as so. Yeah, I mean, she was fantastic. I really liked her, and I hope she does greater things.
You were saying that she reminded you of somebody. I thought, to me, she looked a little bit like Felicia Day from Dr. Horrible.
Oh, you know, I can see that. So sort of the innocence, but still maybe tough inside, maybe. I was really thinking of Rooney Mara, not from The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, but Rooney Mara more from The Social Network. Yeah. Again, you know, it's all in the face. It's all in the eyes. Again, the character's really great in this movie. Anybody else stood out for you in Attack the Block?
Luke Treadway as Brewis, the kind of nerdy Brewis, stoner character.
Yes.
Luke Treadway was, I guess, a baddie in Clash of the Titans. He's done some stage and TV work, but he's seemingly random character who wanders in and out of the movie at strange intervals. And we think he's just a pothead, and he doesn't seem like the brightest peg in the light bright set, but he becomes the most thoughtful character, and he's actually one of the keys to the team survival.
Absolutely. And actually, that kind of brings up a point. When this group of kids encounter other people, neighbors, people they know in the building, new faces that they come across, I think that you know, the film is an exploration of making advanced judgments on what somebody is and what they're worth to you, what they can do for you. So yeah, you know, Luke Treadwell was great. I think that, you know, Alex Esmail as Pest, you know, one of the members of the gang, but the palest member of this mm-hmm. gang, you know, he has kind of a pigmentation deficiency in this group of kids. And I liked him. I think a lot of people would kind of latch onto him because he's a white kid kind of overcompensating with these group of black kids. And he does, out of all of them, I think, betray his youth and, you know, how little he knows about the world. He also ends up in peril and needs to be helped by Sam, and there's kind of a sweet connection there, but nothing overt. So I think there's a lot of subtlety in Alex Esmail's performance. And there is a big bad guy that's not the aliens. There is kind of a major drug player who doesn't like what these kids are up to in his neighborhood.
Right. High Hats is the character's name.
Hats.
He's played by Jumaine Hunter. He controls the block. He's behind everything. And for the duration that he is in the movie, he is a very scary presence. He does not believe the kids. He thinks the kids are just trying to put one over on him and doesn't believe that there is an actual alien invasion. But he is a very threatening presence.
Yeah, I think Jumaine Hunter is really scary. Somebody who I would be afraid of. Somebody who I believe kind of runs the drugs and, you know, all of the bad things that happen in this block, in this area. And what I really enjoyed is that, you know, probably probably for 90% of these kids' lives. They've always been afraid or intimidated by or had massive respect for this high hat. But because of what unfolds, all of a sudden, he's basically an obstacle in their way, somebody who just doesn't get it. I mean, they do telegraph that he's somebody who they would otherwise do anything for, but here, he's just another player. He just doesn't recognize the bigger picture of what's going on, so he's great. We should mention, though, that there is a slightly familiar face in this film. I thought that he was going to be one of the stars by how prominently he's mentioned, but he actually has kind of a small role, and that's Nick Frost.
Nick Frost, he's in a lot of Edgar Wright's productions. He was in Shaun of the Dead.
That's right.
And Hot Fuzz. You'll know him if you saw either of those. He plays a weed dealer. He's kind of an underling of High Hats, and he provides protection for these kids in his grow house.
Right. And it's not a big part, and I'm actually kind of happy for that. Not that I don't like Nick Frost, but when he does appear, he does seem a little out of place to me in terms of maybe he's just being inserted because of his relationship to the film studio, and I think he's doing a lot of the same thing in terms of his character and being comedic relief, perhaps where it's not necessary. So I actually kind of will give the filmmakers the benefit of the doubt and a little bit of credit for holding him back a bit. He's a nice seasoning, but he's absolutely not the main course in this movie.
In reviews for this film, I've read a lot of comparisons to The Goonies, and that is an apt comparison, but I didn't really see it until the appearance of Mayhem and Probs, the two little 10-year-old kids with the squirt guns. The movie could have been really, really super heavy, but I think the presence of these kids injected a little bit of a sense of fun to this film, and they provided a lot of the smiles, and to me, those two characters were what reminded me of The Goonies.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, yes, these are young people, the street gang and the people in this block that we meet, but they're still, you know, fairly world-worn and weary, and I think that Mayhem and Probs, I forget what their real names were, the whole arc is that they want to be gangsters. They want to have the nicknames Mayhem and Probs, but nobody's going to give them that kind of respect. But that is what makes it, I mean, this is not a kid's movie in any respect, but right. More of an adult kid's movie, I think, and that's where I think those young kids help this film get to. So I agree, they were a lot of fun.
Because this movie takes place in South London, where there are a lot of different cultures and a lot of different accents, a lot of the characters do have strong accents,
yeah.
And there's a lot of local slang, there's a lot of swearing, but the rhythm of the speech in the film is such where the swearing doesn't sound jarring, it sounds natural, it sounds poetic almost, and you might even need subtitles when you watch this film, and a lot of the sentences that the characters use, they're punctuated with words like believe and respect. There's a very staccato rhythm to the speech in this film.
Yeah, you know, actually when I was reading up on Attack the Block, a lot of people said that the language, although it is English, technically was one of the liabilities of it. And I guess maybe it is from a straight up dumb American, North American marketing standpoint, but it is one of the strong points. I mean, it is one of the draws of this film in the end, because I couldn't stop thinking, I wish I had that rhythm to my language. It is musical, and it reminded me a lot of The Wire. You know,
right.
You watch The Wire and you get to know the kids, the young people or the people that run the drug business in the low-income housing areas in certain blocks and neighborhoods, and they have a certain way of speaking, certain words that they just throw out and use naturally. It felt a little bit like that, but it did feel authentic to me. You know, not something that was put together because it sounds cool or forced into the mouth of these actors, but, well, at least I hope it's authentic. And like you said, this neighborhood, they're not all from there. They're from different places. They have different languages and backgrounds. They kind of develop like a pidgin, like
right.
Here in Hawaii, kind of a common language that just happens to sound really great. Although there is some universalness to it, too. I liked that when the blue lights rolled up, they all kind of scattered going, 5-0. So,
yeah.
You know, that is familiar. If you watch the film with the sound off, you shouldn't. But even if you didn't understand what they're saying, I think that it was universal enough to understand.
I think in a lot of great horror movies like Invasion of the Body Snatchers and 28 Days Later, there's a little bit of social commentary underneath the
For
action.
Sure.
And I think that's true in this film because it does explore class warfare and racism and law enforcement and the priorities of government in tracking down criminals. I think there is a social commentary, and it is effective when balanced with the action.
Well, you know, it is an exploration of stereotypes and assumptions and prejudice, but when we, just as soon as we start talking about it, even I would start to kind of pull back, but you shouldn't, because it's not nearly as heavy-handed as it sounds. There is a good kind of message. There is a good portrait of how people react and deal with each other, especially, and how they have to come together in times of stress. But it's handled very well. I think that it's just part of the story, but it's also faced directly. I mean, it is actually expressed in dialogue sometimes what they think, for example, of how the rest of the world sees this community. But it's definitely not anvilicious. You know, I think it's handled well. I mean, it's definitely handled effectively.
Yeah, I like how there are big picture things, but it turns into a story about this block into something that's more personal, and it happens very slowly. It seems like it's a story that starts out global in reach to becoming about one forgotten block and one forgotten building, and it's a nice progression.
Well, actually, down to one person. I agree. I actually enjoyed the clever setup that they kind of reveal toward the end that shows how something that, even as I'm watching this film, I'm thinking, how can this not be headline news already around the world? Why can't there be the CNN helicopters overhead? And they do have a rational explanation for how it can be confined to this neighborhood, and really have it comes down to one person. It's a really nice progression, and what it says about these people and that person and the decisions that they make and what they lead to. So yeah, I mean, that kind of setup was my favorite part of the movie. It is what I fear a remake might try to steal from this movie, but without doing everything else just right. That through line, I think, from what could seem like a war between worlds, between planets and species, and how it comes down to a lost, tough 15-year-old kid, that's worth the price of admission alone, in addition to everything else that you get with this picture.
I think an American remake would be disastrous, but this movie is so good, it's probably inevitable.
Absolutely. I'm sure the rights have already been sold and resold a few times.
I did want to talk about the music in this film. Yeah. It's by Basement Jaxx and Stephen Price. It's very synth-heavy, almost clubby. It gives this movie an 80s feel to me. It calls to mind a certain time period. It does remind me of the music in certain genres, Carpenter films, and I think the time period that comes to mind is what lends a lot of comparisons to the Goonies.
Yeah, it takes you to a certain place, even though this is, you know, obviously contemporary, modern London. I loved the music. It did stand out. It was kind of like the Drive soundtrack. Mm-hmm. It was almost omnipresent. It was in every scene. There's even one song, a rap song with lyrics or words that's actually recited by the characters many times. It comes up a number of times, and after seeing the movie for the rest of the evening, I was just sort of bobbing around the house going, brap, 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 get the strap, and making gestures that I have no right making. But, you know, it was infectious. It was a great soundtrack. I think it's certainly one of the draws of the film. So from the music to the decent effects to the great characters, the wonderful plot, just the overall package, it sounds like we're both recommending you go out and look for Attack the Block. You have to check it out.
No, I'm not recommending it. I'm saying you need to go out and see it, especially if you like genre films. But even if you don't, you will be surprised. There are 5 featurettes on the DVD, and for me, this is really sci-fi horror that hits the genre square in the bullseye, but it has a really great heart. It's not full of pretty people, but it's a great bunch of characters.
I totally agree, and it is a tragedy what happened to this film. I recall it did play at South by Southwest. It was a big hit at the midnight screening and won the audience prize there, and Sony Pictures picked it up. They said, okay, this is going to be in our Screen Gems line, but like we mentioned, it didn't have a very wide release. It only made $1 million in the United States, and so nobody got to see it. But now, thanks to DVD distribution for Blu-ray, and I would hope in the near future streaming as well, it is now possible to get your hands on Attack the Block, so please do so. Now, if you saw this film, or if there's another screen gem that we should check out, we absolutely want to hear from you and get your recommendations, and you can email us at feedback@popspotting.net. You can leave a comment on our blog at popspotting.net. Or best of all, you can leave a voicemail that we can share on the show at 815-310-0808.
You can also post on our Facebook page at facebook.com/popspotting, and you can catch us on Twitter at twitter.com/popspotting.
Come back tomorrow for TV Tuesday, where we're going to focus on Fox and its late season offerings. We'll talk about the early preview of Touch, and we can finally take a fuller look at Alcatraz now that everybody else has finally been able to see it.
If you enjoy our podcast, we do hope hope that you'll take a moment to share Pop Spotting with your friends and family. We're very grateful to those of you who have rated and reviewed our show in the iTunes podcast directory. And that's really the best way to bring new listeners into the fold.
Absolutely. Thanks for that. And thanks to Dan Pashman of The Sporkful for making our theme song. Finally, we do want to say mahalo to you for listening to our show.
For Pop Spotting, I'm Jen.
And I'm Ryan.
Aloha.
Aloha.
We're Brad.